Hello and welcome to Somerset Stories, the podcast which explores the lives of the people who live, work and create in Somerset. My name's Lewis Webb, and each week I get to share the stories of some of the inspiring, creative and successful individuals and families that make this beautiful county their home. This season, we'll also be showcasing some of the area's musical talent, with tracks from local artists being played in each podcast. This week, we've got a track from six-piece cowpunk band, the legendary Snake Snake Snake. As ever, your comments, reviews and feedback are always appreciated. And if you'd like to send us a message, you can email hello@somersetstories.com. My guest this week is third-generation hot air balloon pilot Hugo Hall. Seeing a balloon drifting through the Somerset skies at sunset is an iconic image for the county. Hugo's father and grandmother had both been instrumental in the development of ballooning in the UK. And as Hugo embarks on his own project, we talk about what makes Somerset the perfect place to take flight. Hugo, welcome to Somerset Stories.
Thank you very much. Good to be on.
We were just talking about the fact that you've just moved to Stoke St Mary from the lovely village of Wiveliscombe. So both in West Somerset. What are some of your kind of favourite spots or hidden gems in that part of the county?
Well, Wiveliscombe's on the edge of Exmoor, so there's obviously quite a few hidden gems that not many people know about. One that I can't even remember the name of, and it is pretty well hidden. But it's a cool little bridge with a river running through it, the River Ex, just near Simmons Bath on Exmoor. It's really cool. It's normally always raining on Exmoor and a bit cloudy and miserable, but that's part of its charm. And another one is a beautiful lake called Wimbleball, which is, just a huge lake. There's a few water sports and a few activities that take place there, but a lovely walk around it. It takes about 4 hours. I've actually flown over it a few times, and it looks like a kind of a mirror or glass when it's really flat and calm in the evening and the sun's shining on it. So, yeah, that's one of my favourite spots.
Yeah, you can't beat the drama of a moody grey sky over Exmoor, can you?
No, exactly. Yeah, it's always a moody sky on Exmoor, but when you leave, you get into the sunshine. But I guess that is, as you say, it's part of the charm and the attractiveness of the place. And
You come from an esteemed line of balloonists, because you are, in fact, a third generation balloon pilot. And so I'd quite like to explore, you know, some of that heritage. And so let's start with your grandmother, Lady Gwen Bellew. What are your memories of her?
So she passed away in the early 2000s when I was quite young. But we used to go up to her house. She lived in a charming little house in Stow-on-the-World. And my memories of her, she also used to come down to ours, and we did a couple of tethers in the balloon. But she was getting old by this time, so she would kind of sit in there. She had a very, very posh accent, is one of my kind of defining memories of it. I've never heard anyone speak quite like her, which is quite weird. And just as someone who was always very passionate, and her passion for ballooning never wavered, she would always talk about it, and she had a great sense of adventure. She travelled to India when she was really young, I think at the age of 9, by herself. And she'd always talk about her stories, whether it was around the fire, or she'd always be up for trying something. And I guess a big influence on my kind of ballooning inspiration, and also my dad's. But someone who, yeah, she was definitely a pioneer of a few things, and had a great kind of passion for ballooning.
She's credited for being instrumental in bringing ballooning to the UK. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so she used to organise a fundraiser at Dunstable Gliding Club. And she had read an article about an American, Don Pickard. And Don Pickard was an American who produced the first modern-day hot air balloons. And she read this article, got in contact with him, and wanted him to come over and display the balloon at the Dunstable Gliding Club on an afternoon fundraiser. And he did, and that very day, Gwen formed the London Balloon Club, which was the first balloon club in Great Britain. And with a few friends all from London, they bought a hot air balloon called London Pride. A few months later, he came over with it, and they all learnt to fly. It was very primitive back in that day, and you know, there was no such thing as a licence or a balloon pilot, really. So, yeah, it was very early days of ballooning, and that's really how it all started in the UK. And then about that time, there were a few other balloons that were ordered, one, I think, sponsored by Nimble Bread, and then they bought another balloon, London Pride 2.
What sort of people were in the London Balloon Club?
All very interesting. I don't know. Roger Barrett was one of them, who I think was a navigator in the war, from memory, and they were mainly made of glider pilots because it was at Dunstable Gliding Club. All obviously interested in aviation. Gliding and ballooning is relatively similar. And so basically the gliders that used to fly from Dunstable Gliding Club, and they started ballooning in the UK.
How many female pilots were there back in the 1960s and 70s?
Not many. Glad to say there's a few more now. But back then, when my grandmother started, there was only two. I think she was the second to get her licence. And interestingly, my dad always says that women make better pilots anyway, because they can kind of make the balloon dance and they have a very kind of gentle touch to it, which is what kind of flying a balloon is all about. But yeah, there's a few more now, but back then, not so many.
Am I right in believing that she also made an attempt to be the first female pilot to cross the channel?
Yeah, she did. Gwen, with a friend of hers, they actually were the second in the end. Someone had got wind of their idea and did it just before, which I think probably annoyed her, but they all did it. That would have been the third time that anyone had crossed the channel by a hot air balloon.
Back then, was it something that was accessible to most people, or was it kind of a privileged few and you had to sort of know the right person to get up and fly?
Yeah, I think that's very much it. Even from the very early days of the kind of Montgolfier brothers in France, they were the French aristocracy, and it was always seen as a kind of a rich thing to do, or, you know, you had to have money and, again, know the right people. It's a lot more accessible now. And you know, they're all from the same era. Those pilots are all from the same era and the same area. And luckily, since it's spread around, and lots of people from all walks of life are flying. But yeah, back then, for sure, that was a big part of it.
You mentioned your father as well. Giles is a balloon pilot too, so it must have been a very natural thing to have in the family. It must have been not unusual, I suppose, to be around balloons and be talking about balloons just sort of around the dinner table, I suppose.
Yeah, I think from the very early years of my dad's life all the way through to mine now, that's been the case. Not only my grandmother and my father, but my mum and my uncle have all flown hot air balloons, and lots of their family friends. I guess they're now all family friends because they're all in ballooning, but yeah, I was always around balloons from a very early age. I think my sister and my brother are very much have a passion for it too. And yeah, my sister flew across the channel when she was really young, probably about one. And I think that's just about the same time that I had my first flight. And then from a very early age, we would sit on the edge of the basket whilst you wouldn't do it now, but my dad used to fly commercially, and we would just sit on the edge of the basket, sometimes tied, our legs tied around a tank strap to keep us from falling out, and basically sit there and watch whilst Dad worked, and did this for many years. So it was always something that I think I was going to do.
So your first flight was probably something that, you know, was pre-making memories of it.
For sure, yeah. I would have no memories of many of my first flights. There were many of them that I would never know about. Sometimes my parents tell the stories of certain ones, which I can't even recite myself. But yeah, I was just always there. You know, it was a family thing, a family business, and there's always room for a little one, basically. So I was either shoved in the pilot compartment or strapped to the edge and flew alongside.
Do you know how many times you've flown with your father or with your family?
It's hard to say. I would think I've probably flown in a balloon about 1,000 times, which is a lot for someone of my age, because obviously a balloon flight's only an hour, so that's 1,000 flights. Even when I was at school, Dad used to turn up late because Dad would take me for a flight, and at the time he was flying in Bath, and you'd take off very early. He'd take me for a balloon flight, sit in the basket, watch, have the flight. They would all drink champagne, but obviously I wasn't allowed, and then I'd be driven back straight to school and then do a day's work at school. So yeah, it's always been a big part of my life, and I spent a lot of time in a balloon or around them.
Your father also pioneered a particular invention to do with balloons as well.
So in the early days, balloons were very primitive. They all basically, they're nothing like they are now. They weren't safe. They had a death rate, I think, similar to kind of motor racing back in the day. And my dad had an incident with a friend of his, Chris Chappell, and they were at, I think, 7,000 foot. And they used to have a circular rip panel at the top of the balloon held on by Velcro. And it partially opened in flight, and they came whistling down with the burners on the whole time, and very nearly had a serious, well, they did have a serious accident, but survived. And my dad got out and thought there's got to be a better way of doing this. And he had an idea of where it resealed after you let it open, so you could use it in flight as well as for landing. So you could pull a rope and then it would pull down the top of the balloon and let the hot air escape. And then when you let go, it would reseal and the balloon would repressurize. And I think he took the idea to RAF Cranwell and told one of the chaps there, and they designed this thing together, and Dad built it in his dining room with a friend of his, John Gore. And yeah, that is now basically commonplace in every balloon in the world, or a variation of it. But it's far safer than any other system that's come into place since.
As you grew up, having, you know, so many flights from such a young age, you didn't have necessarily that opportunity to have the experience of like a first flight and thinking, wow, this is amazing. Do you have a moment where you felt, this is how I want to spend my time, this is what I want to do? Or was it more of a gradual thing and just the sort of familiarity of being around hot air balloons your sort of young life as well?
Yeah, that's right. I often actually think when I talk to passengers after a balloon flight or people that have never been in a balloon, and they say certain things, and I think I've never actually really experienced that because I've always been in a balloon or been around a balloon. And I guess it comes very naturally to me. I don't have that kind of first experience, if you like. And for me, I think being such a family thing and always being around balloons, seeing pictures of balloons and being in balloons, it was always a thing I wanted to do. But it was really only in my early 20s after doing a few things. And I thought to myself, actually, you know, this really is kind of what I want to do. All my family have flown balloons. I'd done a bit of flying in my early 20s. And I thought, you know, what better way to spend your day? Wake up in the morning, set up and fly a hot air balloon and then go back and do the same thing in the evening. And every flight is very different, and I have a big thirst for adventure, and ballooning was a great way to fulfill that. So for sure it was, I guess, the early 20s when I really realized this is what I wanted to do as a business and a job. But my whole life I have wanted to fly balloons.
For someone who's never flown in a hot air balloon, how would you describe the experience?
Serene, peaceful, and totally unique. It's very strange. It's a sensation of floating as the world drifts below you, and you go with the wind, so there is no sense of movement particularly. And there is nothing else like it. There is no other experience that compares, and everybody must try a hot air balloon ride at least once in their life. It is something totally unique, an experience like no other, and well worth having a go.
You didn't train in the UK though. What prompted you to go to Australia?
So I was looking to go to Australia for a holiday, and at the same time in my early 20s was thinking, you know, hot air ballooning is really what I want to do, and Australia has fair weather and there's a lot of hot air ballooning in Victoria. I also knew a chap who worked for a company over there. So when I went, I walked into the office, and as soon as I said my surname, actually, that a couple of them had heard about my father, and I got the opportunity straight away to learn to fly, and I took it up, and learning in the Yarra Valley was great. It's also quite a tricky place. It's very commercial, a lot of target flying where you have to land in particular spots. Due to like landowner issues or vineyards and so forth. And I took the opportunity. It didn't take very long, probably because all the times I've spent in balloons and been around them. And after 16 hours, I had my license, and I then went to do some flying in Alice Springs.
Was it funny doing formal training when you had literally spent, you know, the first 20 something years of your life in and around balloons and sort of coming at this probably knowing a little bit more than some of the instructors maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I actually did my first, you have to do a solo flight, and I actually did my first solo in France when I was 14, and which you're not allowed to get a license until you're 18 anyway, but I was flying with my dad, and he just jumped out of the balloon and then said, right, off you go, and I just flew and then came down half an hour, 40 minutes afterwards, and And then, and kind of my whole upbringing was very laissez-faire with ballooning, and you know, my dad was very confident around them and so forth, and we'd do some hairy things on private flights and so forth. And then when I went to Australia, and yeah, as you say, it became very formal, it was almost a bit new to me in the sense of, oh, you actually have to do this. Oh, you know, you should wear gloves, you know, this kind of thing. So it was quite strange. I think I knew a lot more about the history of ballooning than a lot of these, the pilots in Australia, but that's probably because my family's a part of it, especially in Great Britain. And the exams, my dad used to always talk us through the weather when it was on Countryfile in the evening or looking at the forecast. And even during the day, I remember he would always talk about certain trees and how they move. And, you know, if they're moving at 12 and 2 o'clock, then it's probably not going to be flyable in the evening. And I remember thinking about some of these things when I was in Australia and the pilot's looking at me and, you know, almost thinking, I don't know what he's talking about. But it works. It works very well here and it worked there. But yeah, it was strange sitting down and doing it all very formally. And training with somebody else actually is really good. They say in ballooning you should kind of fly with as many different people as possible, because everyone has their own way of doing things, and, you know, not one particular way is correct. So yeah, it was a strange experience and one that I'm glad I did.
It's interesting that you mention taking cues from nature and, you know, trees blowing at certain times in certain directions. How much of a blend of art and science is there to flying?
Flying is very much about your judgment and, as you say, kind of reading the weather. And you can take a lot from nature by looking at the clouds and as how fast the trees are moving. And they all have different effects on a balloon flight. So even the other day I was flying in South Somerset and there was one big cloud. And I knew it was having an effect on the weather because it was breezy. It was coming. The wind was coming from different directions. And you know, as that passed and the weather got a lot better and the wind calmed down, and then we went for a balloon flight. So definitely to be a good pilot, you have to look at a wide variety of data from forecasters such as the Met Office or the more forecasts you get, the better for a balloon flight. But also just standing in the field, there is nothing better than getting a true observation of what is going on. And a good way that we always do it is we let off a little party balloon full of helium. And obviously where that goes, the balloon will go. And you can tell a lot from that once you let it off. And we let the balloon go and we can track it with a compass. So we know roughly how quickly it climbs. So we know kind of the height it is after a minute and what direction it's getting. And that's really our best way of knowing exactly where we'll go on a balloon flight before we go. And even whilst you fly, taking note of different things that are happening on the ground or in the sky around you. So, for example, if you're flying above a town, you might be looking for people that are having fires and seeing which direction the smoke is going. Or perhaps someone's got a flagpole outside their house and you'd be looking at the flag and kind of trying to judge the wind speed and the direction. And so you can take a lot of cues from different things, and it's always the more data you intake in a balloon flight and before a balloon flight, the more confident you'll be about, you know, where you'll land and the weather in general. So and the science of it is very much, there's a trend in meteorology, which is that the higher you go, the more the air swings around, the wind swings around to the right. So it's about a third to the right as it is on the ground. A good natural way of kind of seeing the weather when you're in the balloon is actually it sounds a bit strange, but to dribble over the side of the basket, and then you can watch your spit as it falls, and you can see it moving, you know, perhaps to the left or to the right, and you know what the different wind directions are lower down. And obviously as we climb, we look at the GPS and we can see the compass direction and we can fly very accurately to a particular area. But most of the time, the beauty of ballooning is you don't know where you'll end up. And as long as you're putting yourself as a pilot in a good area with some nice places to land, then that's usually good enough to have a successful flight.
Going back briefly to your time in the Yarra Valley, are there any similarities between the location there and Somerset?
I suppose it's very green. It's not quite as warm, But yeah, it's very green. There's the rolling hills, and there is definitely a similarity to it. It's obviously a lot more authentic and rustic around here, whereas out there, obviously, it has the elements of tourism and the vineyards and flying over lush countryside, which is very green, which is definitely similar to Somerset. But as I was saying, it's far more authentic and rustic and kind of rural here, and a bit more built up and tourism focused in the Yarra Valley.
You've also had the opportunity to fly balloons in other quite dramatic locations, I think India included. What have been your most memorable flights?
Actually, one in India. This was last year, so it was just before the lockdown. We were asked to go to India with a balloon and to kind of increase tourism to Meghalaya, which is known as the Scotland of the East. And balloons had never actually flown in that state before. And we arrived a day after the first balloon pilots. And they did a balloon flight. And I remember Andrew Gregory, one of the pilots, telling me, I really don't know where we're going to land 12 balloons. And really, it was just mountains and jungle, as far as you could see, with the odd playing field and school. There was a prison, actually, in one of them, which had a nice green bit outside that we tried to land at. But one of my most memorable flights there was... we took off and we were heading straight into the mountains, and we'd looked at a MET balloon, a little helium balloon, beforehand, and it went off to the right, and that was taking us on a map towards a kind of couple of villages or very, very small towns. But Andrew and I decided to fly down the mountain or down into the mountains and work out where we'd land afterwards. And there was a waterfall behind us. As we came down, you could feel the kind of damp air from the waterfall, and all you could see was this cascading river amongst the mountains all the way down, with trees surrounding you and not any sign of human life. And it was something that I'll remember for rest of my life, and was very memorable at the time and still is. I've never experienced anything like it. And sure enough, we shot up high, and we eventually did end up landing near the town. But... balloons hadn't been in that area before. You know, everybody loved it. Wherever you were, people would be rushing out to come and help you. And it was an opportunity we couldn't miss, even if we were going to have to somehow slide the balloon between the trees and land in the middle of nowhere.
How far off the ground were you when you were right by that waterfall?
So we were coming over the mountain at probably only 100 foot. And then we gave it a bit of space before we started to descend, and then we followed the river down, and that's most likely the cold air cooling and going to the bottom of the valley, and obviously the balloon goes with the wind, so we did the same. Yeah, and then we just followed it all the way down and eventually decided to climb and head over and try and find somewhere suitable to land.
You were talking earlier a little bit about the first balloonists and the history of hot air ballooning. So the brothers that you mentioned.
Yes, the Montgolfier brothers.
Yeah, so what was their story?
So they were two brothers, the Montgolfier brothers, and they ran a paper manufacturer in Annonay in France. And they built a balloon from silk and lined it with paper, and they held it together in a similar design to the old gas balloons, which was having a kind of fishnet around it to keep it together. And they took off with a sheep, a duck and a rooster on board, as they didn't know what would happen to man in flight. And I think the flight lasted about 10 minutes. They flew 2 kilometres, and it all came crashing and burning down a couple of kilometres later on the outskirts of Paris. And I think after that, the king allowed humans to fly, and the first ascent was by the two brothers in 1783, so which was the same year as the sheep, duck and the rooster. And that's where kind of the gas ballooning started. And that was also man's first taste of flight, and kind of all aviation since then. All aviation has been since the Montgolfier brothers. And in ballooning... in France, Montgolfier means balloon. It became tradition in France to take champagne and to drink it after the flight. As the aristocracy were not very popular with the poor, when they landed in a farmer's field, they were often attacked by pitchforks, and so they gave champagne as kind of a goodwill gesture to landowners. and to show that they were friendly aristocracy. And this is something that we still do today. I actually give gin away, but that's because I'm sponsored by a gin company. But lots of ballooning companies will drink, will have a, will toast to the flight with champagne, and often provide the farmer with a bottle.
Back in those early flights, what were they using to generate the hot air? Because I know obviously it's a gas burner in modern balloons, but what were they using back in, you know, 18th century France?
Literally a fire on a platform dangled below the balloon. And that's why they didn't last too long, and they often came down. You wouldn't have thought paper and fire would work too well, and I mean it didn't. That's why we now use a different fabric. But very primitive in those days, and it was man's first taste of flight.
From there, I suppose there was a bit of a split between just hot air versus, you know, gases like hydrogen, for example. How did those two sort of methods of generating lift develop?
So in the early days, they tended to use helium and hydrogen to fly. And since the 1960s and kind of developments in technology with the invention of the propane burner, which uses LPG.
So it was that burner really that sparked more of a modern revival in the 50s and 60s then?
Yeah, so with the invention of the propane burner, hot air ballooning became like a very much more practical form of aviation. And now, obviously, every hot air balloon uses these propane burners. There are still gas balloonists, which work by dropping ballast over the edge, like sandbags, to climb and letting out helium to descend. But hot air balloons are almost entirely useless. They're just there for people's enjoyment, and they're fueled from propane. Which is burnt, and obviously hot air rises. It's very simple science. Hot air rises, and as it cools, it descends. And if you heat a captivated space, it will climb. And that's the very principle of it.
You mentioned the sort of quirky tradition of bringing champagne to bribe people who might want you not landing in their fields.
Yeah,
I've read that there's some other interesting quirks as well, like the balloonist's prayer. Where does that come from?
So I thought you might mention this. This is actually something that a lot of American pilots still recite after a balloon flight. I screenshotted a picture of it so I could tell it if you want me to.
Yeah, why not?
Well, it goes, "The winds have welcomed you with softness. The sun has blessed you with its warm hands. We have flown so high and so well that God has joined you in laughter and set you gently back into the loving earth's loving arms of Mother Earth." So that's the prayer. It's very short. I don't actually know where it came from.
But it's an American thing.
They are the ones that still kind of recite this poem after a balloon flight, whereas us Brits just drink champagne and and have a laugh.
I mean, you've managed 1,000 flights without having to pray about it, so...
It obviously did a good job. Some my family obviously know what they're doing. But yeah, no, ballooning is very safe. You definitely don't need to pray before. But I guess sometimes it is nice to say a little prayer afterwards and to toast your balloon flight.
What other traditions do you have around your flights?
Well, we're sponsored by the Bath Distillery, so we often have a gin and tonic after the flight. Sometimes during the flight, if there's only a couple of people on board. But it's it means that everyone can try the product of the balloon that they've flown in. And it's always nice to stand around to chat about the experience, to find out what the people you have flown, if they've flown for their first time, how they found it, how they felt. And it's nice. It's a great part of ballooning is the people that you meet. And when you're actually actively flying the balloon, obviously you have a lot to concentrate on, and you don't have much time to find out about them, and you're a lot of the time you're answering questions that they ask you. So it's kind of nice to toast to the flight, to kind of end it with a post-flight drink. Failing that, we sometimes go to the pub if it's a private flight.
With things like sailing, boats on their maiden voyage get, you know, christened and have a bottle of something smashed against the bows. How do balloons come up with their names? And is there anything special that is done on a balloon's maiden flight?
So a balloon, every aircraft has to have a registration. And in Britain, it starts with G, and then it's a dash, and it's four letters. Ours is GINZ, so it's Gulf, India, November, Zulu, Zulu. And this is just a way for a balloon to be identified, or any aircraft to be identified by air traffic control or by the Civil Aviation Authority. And yeah, and then some pilots also name their balloon. I've been flying one before, which is an old balloon of, well, it's actually an old balloon of my grandmother's, which my father flew for many years. And the registration is Golf Bravo Hotel Bravo Bravo, which doesn't really mean anything, but it's got a kind of stylized man on the envelope. And this was all hand drawn because there were no computers when the balloon was built. And it's called Ombre because it's got this stylized man, and Ombre is obviously. So yeah, and actually, funnily enough, my brother is called Henry, and my dad, two of his balloons, he had a balloon sponsored by Pneumatic, which was the Henry Hoover, and the registration was G. Henry, as it has to be four letters. And then he had a balloon made and called it G. Hugo, which came after me, actually. So I've got the right number of letters in my name to be on a balloon. And it's a registration that I want to also use myself at some point, but you can only put the aircraft registration on one balloon. So the same balloon has to be built with the crown ring, which is the identifying piece of the balloon at the top of it. So one day I'll hopefully fly a balloon that's also called G. Hugo. And as for its maiden voyage, there is no tradition for a balloon on its maiden voyage, but obviously we sat around and drank a bottle of Bath gin because our balloon is sponsored by them.
Seeing a hot air balloon drifting over the Somerset landscape at sunset is such a striking and iconic image for our county. What is it about Somerset that makes it good for ballooning?
Well, as a passenger, I think Somerset offers something very spectacular. It's a stunning part of the world with great green countryside and rolling hills amongst, you know, beautiful lakes and woodlands, as well as pretty decent landmarks such as Glastonbury Tor or Wells Cathedral, and, you know, Cheddar Gorge, and all of them look just as good, if not far better, from a hot air balloon. And I think with Cameron Balloons in Bristol, the manufacturer, Somerset's become kind of the ballooning capital of this country. And yeah, from a pilot perspective, Somerset has a lot going for it, really. It's the great countryside is more pasture, less crop. There's usually a lot of places to land. The landowners are usually very welcoming. I think it's because they're used to hot air balloons. And it's also less populated, so it's a bit easier to fly. And it also has reduced airspace, which most parts of the country, you'll find yourself going and flying around a lot of airports and air traffic control zones, whereas Somerset really doesn't have that.
We've talked a bit about the element of ballooning being very much a family business, but your most recent venture is you making your own mark on that. What's the story behind Flyaway Ballooning?
My business partner and I have been longtime friends, and my dad took Sam for his first flight when I think he was about 13 or 14. And then we invited him to a balloon event in France, and he loved it. And ever since then, we had spoken about doing something, and now was the time. I remember as children, we'd hang around in my dad's barn, probably being more of a nuisance than a help, you know, messing around with balloons, lighting the burners when we shouldn't have been, and also sat around in the offices, you know, swinging on the chair and pretending to pick up the phone and booking a flight. I don't know, all the things you do as a kid are kind of dreamy, kind of a dream, basically, and it always has been. And the time was right, and we decided that we'd go out and get a balloon. And after the first lockdown, seemed like a good opportunity to do that. There were obviously a lot of companies that needed to make a presence and kind of bounce back into business. And we approached the right one. We approached Bath Gin, who have sponsored our balloon. And the owner had always wanted a hot air balloon. He'd been very interested in them. And I think he'd spoken to Cameron's about one before. But the time was right for him, as it was for us, and we went to see them, and yeah, they said yes. And ever since then, they've been fully supportive. They love it. They think it's amazingly pretty and would be a great media vehicle for Bath Gin.
Aside from the practical elements of actually piloting the balloon, what do you think about while you're flying over the county?
Your mind is obviously a lot of the time focused on the balloon flight, but you're also always looking out and seeing things that you potentially haven't seen before, or and stuff that you see every flight, but that looks so different in a different place, whether that's deer skipping through tall crops or birds swooping from the trees. And you're kind of in your own world. You're floating above the town or the county. It's almost awe-inspiring what you can see, and every flight is very different. No two flights are the same. So you're always seeing new things, discovering new places. It's basically a completely whole new adventure every time you pull the quick release and the balloon takes off.
Have you had moments where having that bird's eye view of the world has had an impact on, you know, your perspective on life?
I think several times when I've flown over large areas of woodland that perhaps been cut down, or areas where they have turned a kind of a beautiful part or edge of a town or so forth into a huge industrial state, it almost makes you think, or even a housing state, it almost makes you think they're kind of imposing us on what is a wonderful area and a beautiful surrounding. And you see it a lot with new developments. You'd be flying over a beautiful countryside and then suddenly there'll be 1,000 houses in front of you. And it sometimes feels like a shame, because before we would just gently float along, it would all have been trees and hedges and fields. And now there's definitely obviously signs of human life and settlement.
And I suppose you do get to see that impact on the natural world from a different angle, literally.
Yeah, totally. There's no, short of having a drone, there's no other way you kind of get that perspective. It's something that's so great about ballooning, is to be able to float over the natural world, and you can see you can see the impact that humans have on the area you fly.
As a new feature for this season, we're showcasing Somerset's musical talent with tracks from local acts in each podcast. The legendary Snake, Snake, Snake are a musical Borough Hillbilly six-piece featuring guitar, banjo, double bass, fiddle, trumpet, and cajon. They describe their sound as Johnny Cash meets Hayseed Dixie and the Ramones, a sort of country cowpunk vaudeville mishmash. From the group's debut album, The Gentleman's Kitchen, this is Hoo-Wee.
Don't worry, man, just jumping on. the time it was dawn.
We are approaching the time where we're, you know, coming out of restrictions from having the pandemic. What does that mean for you and your business? And what are you most looking forward to in terms of your own business, but also, you know, the ballooning community more widely?
So leaving the pandemic allows us to fly more people. And leaving the pandemic opens up a lot more opportunities for hot air ballooning, and especially traveling overseas and flying at balloon events and meets and festivals across the UK and Europe, which is always great fun. And, you know, they're almost like mini festivals with sometimes 200-300 balloons, and everyone there is a hot air balloon pilot or their crew. So there's lots of standing around talking about balloons. But also flying them in the mornings and evenings. And for our business, we hope it will give us the opportunity to grow. People obviously haven't really been going abroad, and I guess a lot of people might not be looking to do that either this year and the next year. So why not come and spend a couple of £100 and two of you, or sorry, why not, instead of travelling abroad, just love your home and do something here. You know, there's plenty to discover. Where you live or in your own country, and a hot air ballooning is a great way to do that. And what else did you say?
I think that's good. That's fine.
Is that right?
Obviously, one of the events you mentioned, those being quite significant. The biggest local one is obviously the Bristol Balloon Fiesta. Is that something that you're taking part in this year that you've done before?
Yeah, I've done this before. I actually have a memory of Bristol Balloon Fiesta, which was somebody pulled a pipe from a trailer and blew the national anthem through it whilst holding the radio to the other end. And obviously you could hear just hundreds of radios with the national anthem of this guy blowing through it from when I was a child. A very strange memory and not really too blooming, but anyway. Yeah, I have been before. It's great fun. You're flying over iconic landmarks in Bristol, you know, Clifton Suspension Bridge, and over a city that loves ballooning. And wherever you land around Bristol, people always rush out to help. They tell stories of the last balloon they saw, when they saw it. And it's a great place to fly. And obviously, being local to this area, I know quite a few of the pilots, even though a lot come from overseas. And it's just a great get together, all to have fun and enjoy a sport that you all have a big passion for. So we'll be attending this year too.
How tricky is it flying with so many other balloons in relatively close proximity?
It can be tricky, but it also has its advantages. So the most dangerous part about it would be if you were climbing or descending and there was a balloon directly above or below you. And that way you would, if you did collide, you'd rip the panel at the top of the balloon out and you'd probably come careering down. And it's also quite tricky. Balloons are safe if they are bouncing off each other at the same height. That's not a problem with ballooning. But it's just making sure you're always aware of who's around you, who's above you, who's below you, which can be obviously quite difficult because above you, you just have a huge ball of fabric or bag of fabric. But then the advantages of flying around lots of other balloons is you can see at what height a particular balloon is and what direction they're getting. You might be able to see that they're heading to somewhere that looks like a nice spot to land or into good open countryside, so you can try and follow them. But also the beauty of it really is that you can chat to the people in the basket beside you. It's very quiet when the burners aren't on, and it's just an incredible view to see hundreds of balloons floating over a city whilst you're in one. It's very, very unique.
The point you made about speaking to people in, you know, the baskets and the balloons next to you, how far does conversation travel at that altitude and when you're, you know, in the basket? How far can you have those conversations?
You've got to be pretty close, and but you know, you often have the few passing comments. It's oh, what a lovely day to be flying, or you know, or whatever, some kind of cheesy line that you might shout across. And but you know, other times you can have a conversation about the flight and where you're looking to go and so forth, but you've got to be in fairly close proximity. But it's, you get a very good viewpoint, and there's no kind of ground noise or disturbance as long as you're both not burning. It's pretty good to hear someone nearby.
Finally, this year, as you said, is an opportunity for people to experience more around their local environment, and maybe, you know, maybe go up in a balloon for the first time. But I'm aware that people can be a little anxious or hesitant simply because it is literally, as you said before, it's using hot air to create lift, and you're in a wicker basket. For people who might have a little bit of anxiety or are concerned, what would you say to them?
Balloons are very safe. They're one of the safest forms of aviation, and it's not like an aircraft or a helicopter. In a balloon, it's simple science. There's not really anything that can go wrong in terms of the equipment. And the physics of ballooning and the science behind it works and will always work, and that is how it is. There is nothing to be afraid of. It is one of the safest forms of aviation. It is very rare that you hear of a ballooning accident versus the number of times that hot air balloon flights occur. We're regulated heavily by the Civil Aviation Authority, and the balloon and the equipment is inspected. And as a pilot, you know, we're examined yearly. We have check flights to do, and it is very safe. It's obviously, for someone that hasn't been in a balloon before, a few flight nerves are normal, but you usually find after a few minutes that everyone settles down into the flight, and you really realise that it is totally peaceful, unique, calming, and it is very relaxing. And a balloon flight, and you know, that often people are most worried about the landing, but it's usually the bit afterwards that people enjoy the most. And you know, you kind of hit the ground and you bounce along and you drag, maybe if it's windy, but it's all very fun. Everyone's usually laughing. It's a great thing to do. I would really recommend it to anyone. Everybody should give it a go at least once. There is no other experience like it, and it's really not scary. But it's normal to have a few flight nerves.
Hugo, before we go, where can people find out more about you, about, you know, what you're doing in particular this year, and how they might go on their first flight, or maybe someone who's a bit more experienced as well?
Yeah, so our company is called Flyaway Ballooning. We obviously are on all the social media sites, Facebook, Instagram, and so forth. But our website, flyawayballooning.com. We have a bit about us, and obviously there's a lot about me as well and my ballooning background. And you can find out and on there, you know, you can obviously book your ticket and come for a balloon flight. We fly in Somerset, Devon, and Dorset. So do check us out if you're looking for a hot air balloon flight, and especially if you love gin, then there is nowhere else to go. Yeah, do check us out.
Hugo, thank you so much for your time. It's been really great talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Somerset Stories. If you liked it, you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on social media at Somerset Stories, or email hello@somersetstories.com. Music on all Somerset Stories productions is created by Jazar. You can be found at betterwithmusic.com. See you next time.